You're invited to a psychic fair, or as we like to call it, the Michigan Spirit and Light Festival, on Sunday, March 9th, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Admission is only $4 if you bring canned goods and non-perishables, featuring dozens of great psychics and industry-related vendors from all over Southeast Michigan. Sunday, March 9th at Stage 3 Productions in Warren, Michigan. For directions and information on how you can be one of our vendors, visit www.tangledwishes.com. That's tangledwishes.com.
I'm Tim Yancey, inviting you to explore the fascinating realm of the paranormal, ghosts and hauntings, Bigfoot, UFOs, and alien abductions. Join me live every Sunday evening at 9 p.m. with the foremost authorities and experts in the world regarding the mysterious realm of the unexplained. The Encounters Paranormal Radio Series, as heard on WBZT 1230 AM. EncountersBroadcasting.com.
asking you.
Hey, Scott O. I just want to thank you for this sweet Go Sweet Talk t-shirt, man. When I put it on, women just start coming at me from all directions.
Well, no problem, dude.
Oh, yeah, and check this out. I had this rash on my chest for like 3 months, right? The first time I wore this Go Sweet Talk t-shirt for the day, I took it off before bed and the rash was gone.
Really?
Yeah, dude. I also worked at a job interview I had last week, and not only did I get the job, but the boss liked it so much, he made me his partner.
Huh?
Yeah, and I'm now a millionaire because of your Ghostly Talk t-shirts.
Well, you know, we not only have new t-shirts for 2007, but Ghostly Talk also has a brand new line of bumper stickers and 1¼-inch buttons.
You're kidding!
No, sir. You can check them out and also find out how to order them at ghostlytalk.com.
I must go and order all of them now!
Whoa, hold on. Save some for the rest of the listeners. As you can see, Ghostly Talk swag is going fast, so head on over to ghostlytalk.com and check it out. T-shirts, bumper stickers, and 1¼-inch buttons, all for a very cheap price. Order yours today.
You are listening to Ghostly Talk with your hosts, Doug and Scott L.
Alien abduction typically runs in families, and Ann Andrews came from a long line of abductees, although it wasn't until her son's experiences accelerated that she began having dreams and was given back long-hidden memories, which enabled her to accept and cope with what was going on with her youngest son, Jason. What sets Jason apart from many other young children who are now being born with exceptional multidimensional abilities is that Jason is not only an abductee, but is himself of extraterrestrial origin. And he explains that, quote, technically, we are all extraterrestrials because there's no one amongst you who comes from here. Our next guest is coming all the way from England, where she graciously is staying up late.
Oh,
late.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
First, her website is www.walkingbetweenworlds, all run together, no spaces, walkingbetweenworlds.co.uk. And with that, we would like to welcome Ann Andrews to Ghostly Talk. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
It's good to have you on the show, Anne. Now, this last, when I was reading through the material and stuff for the show tonight, and that last sentence, and that's why I was like, oh my goodness, because the last sentence, technically we are all extraterrestrials, because there is no one amongst us, well, amongst you, who comes from here. That kind of really freaked me out, Anne. To be blunt, it kind of, I mean, can we talk about that for a second? I mean, what does that mean?
Well, basically, it means that, as Jason explains it, he says that, you know, people obviously are people, but he's talking about the soul, you know, the soul element or the spirit or the essence, if you like. He says that just carries on forever. You know, he says that bodies are, I suppose, the same sort of thing as you know, us wearing clothes. He says it's the spirit or the soul that is, you know, is the essence of who we are, or what we are. And he also explains that it's that energy side of every living creature, of every living being, that can actually choose to go on, to take up residence, anywhere in the universe and probably beyond.
Wow.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, tell me about Jason. Your youngest son, and he was obviously going through some phases of some kind.
Yeah.
You had to have noticed, and you didn't realize what was going on in the early stages. How did that all come about?
Well, basically, we only sort of, how can I put it? He'd had problems since he was just a few months old. We would find him moved out of his cot, you know, and we would hear him crying, going to the bedroom, and we would find that, you know, he was either at the other end of the cot or else he was underneath it. Occasionally he was underneath a chair or behind the door, He was always in the room, but obviously, you know, we could never work out how he was being moved. We just put it down to the fact that, you know, maybe it was his four-year-old brother, and maybe if he stood on his tiptoes on a chair, you know, he might just be able to reach. But, I mean, this sort of thing continued to happen even when his older brother Daniel wasn't even in the house. So obviously it really, really worried us for quite a while. You know, we didn't know what to do about it or what was happening. But then it all seemed to stop. So, you know, obviously it was just like, well, okay, we don't have to worry about it now. We'll just get on with our lives. It's something that's happened. Don't think about it. You know, it's not there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll say it sort of got to, I suppose, the stage when he was a toddler that he would sort of come into us in the night screaming that there were little people in his room. And he would always tell us that they would make him go away with them. We you know, used to, well, we thought we were humouring him at the time. You know, we just put it down to bad nightmares, bad dreams. And we used to say, well, you know, what happens? And he used to explain to us that he would be sound asleep and then suddenly he would wake up and he would be wide awake. But he wouldn't be able to move. He could only move his eyes, but, you know, he was paralyzed apart from that. And he said that's when he would notice them. He said sometimes they would come up through the floor. Sometimes they would just come, you know, appear through, walking through the walls. And he said that they would make him sort of float with them, and they would take him out sort of, you know, straight through the wall or through the glass. And he said that they would take him to what he assumed was he called it a hospital place.
A hospital? And you said a hospital? I mean, a type of, like, a hospital-like place, you said.
That's correct, yes. He just assumed, because he always found himself on some sort of slab or like a bed sort of thing. You know, he said it was always really, really cold. He said that there were no... I mean, obviously, we got this information from him as he grew older. But he explained to us that there were no corners, there were no edges. Everything was, like, rounded off. And he said it was always cold there, and he was on some sort of marble slab. And there would be some sort of light source in the room, but you could never see where it was coming from. But as I say, at that time, you know, at that tender age, you know, we thought, as I say, we just naturally, like any parent would, we just thought, you know, he's having bad nightmares, he's having bad dreams. So obviously, you know, we were always there for him in the sense that, you know, parents are there for their children, you know, mm-hmm. to cuddle him and tell him everything's okay and it'll all be all right. But obviously this persisted, and, you know, right up until early teenage years, you know, his story never ever changed. It was always the same, you know, the same scenario, the same beings that would take him out. And as I say, when he was very young, he just assumed that it was some sort of hospital, because, you know, he'd seen hospitals obviously on the TV and, like, when we visited people, and, you know, he always just used to think that's where he was taken.
Ooh. Did he feel threatened by, I mean, obviously it upset him, or else he wouldn't be, you know, running in and talking about it, but was it a threatening thing? Or it sounds to me like now that we know more, he's learned a lot through all this stuff. So, I mean, I think it was probably on the whole fairly good, because he's learned more than I've, you know, learned about the nature of the soul without actually going out and seeking it. Mm-hmm. So some things, you know, some things are beneficial, but was there a negative toward it, or was it just frightening because he was didn't
young.
Understand
yeah,
it at the
young.
Time?
Yeah, he was absolutely terrified. You know, I can't stress that enough. He was just petrified. Because obviously, if you can imagine, you know, say when he was about four, you know, this sort of thing was happening. And I mean, obviously, you know, as I say, he used to sort of, you know, come into us, and tell us, you know, what had been happening to him. And of course, we used to cover him, and we used to say, look, you know, Mummy and Daddy wouldn't let anything hurt you, and, you know, there's nothing there in the dark that isn't there in the daylight, and this sort of thing. And he just used to look at us and cry and say, but there is. You know, I mean, it was just, I mean, my biggest regret, you know, the thing that I feel real guilty about is the fact that it actually took us 12 years before, you know, we actually even considered that, you know, this alien abduction could be a possibility. So, of course, our son had, you know, growing up 12 years to, you know, to have all this terror and absolute fear going on throughout his life. And of course, nobody to turn to, basically, you know, for real support.
Well, you know, and something that had to have happened, obviously, for you guys to realize this may have been something more than just bad dreams. I mean, there's something had to have happened. The crux had to something had to have happened in the situation for you guys to realize there's more going on than just bad dreams here. What exactly were those things that they made you guys realize there's more going on here?
Well, I should have mentioned as well that our older son Daniel, who's now 28, but he actually had. What we considered was an imaginary friend when he was very, very young, which we just put down to the fact that, you know, well, okay, Jason's just been born, so perhaps he's had to invent another friend to, you know, to sort of, I don't know, just like, you know, just his playmate. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Daniel would describe his friend to us. He called him Junus, and he said that he was as tall as Daddy, you know, my husband, and but he said that, you know, he wore this like all in one suit, and he would come to Daniel at night, and he would teach him about the stars, and, you know, various things to do with you know, to do with astronomy, which at the time, you know, we were quite amazed because Daniel had such a fantastic knowledge of you know, star systems, and he would stand there and, you know, explain them to us. And of course we just assumed at that time, oh well, you know, perhaps it's something new they're teaching at school, or but then, you know, Daniel came to us in tears, as I say, when Jason started having experiences, and we said to him, what's the matter? And he said my friend Junus has told me that he won't be coming to see me again for a while. And of course we humored him, as I said, and we said why. And he said, Junus has told me that they've made a mistake and that they should be working with Jason, not me.
Oh.
So, of course, that got my attention. I said, oh, why is that? And he said, Junus told me that it's because Jason has an original soul. And he said to me, what's that then, Mum? You know, and of course, at that time, I didn't have a clue. I was just, I don't know, Daniel, but, I mean, obviously he was extremely, you know, upset about this whole thing. But I suppose, really, we actually sort of, you know, got an idea of what was going on, because it got to the time, as I say, when Jason was about 12 years old, and we were actually taking him to see a psychiatrist, you know, a child psychiatrist, and... you know, she wasn't sort of, you know, getting anywhere with him. You know, she actually said to us, well, he's not psychotic in any way. You know, in other words, he's not mentally ill. You know, she said there is definitely something going on, but, you know, I can't get to the bottom of it. And we were actually, as a family, you know, the four of us were actually sitting one evening watching a documentary on hypnosis. It was the thing that, you know, that they do for fun, and then there was a more serious bit about using hypnosis to help people overcome fears, and then helping people to remember things which, you know, that they couldn't recall.
Yeah, regression.
And that's it. Yeah, sorry, I couldn't think of that.
No problem.
and then there was this segment came up sort of after the break, and it said, oh, you know, showed you this guy. And he was talking, he was saying, explained that he was a lorry driver, and he was driving one night and he saw this light, and he was remembering sort of, you know, fragmented memories of being taken and the abduction thing. And of course we my husband and I sat there and, you know, thought, oh, this should be good, you know, it's sort of good for a laugh if nothing else. And you know, at that point, I mean, Jason got up, he was already crying, and he threw something at the TV set, and of course my husband jumped and said, what do you think you're doing? And
yeah.
He just said, you know, he said, that guy there is just so stupid, he said, he shouldn't want to remember, he said, because he said, I remember everything, he said, and I don't want to. And, of course, with that, he just left the room, and we were just sort of sitting there stunned, thinking, well, what on earth is he talking about? And it was Daniel who actually said to us, don't you get it yet? You know, do you not understand what's going on? So, of course, we asked him, and he explained to us that Jason had been having abduction experiences, much the same as he had, you know, for years before. And we just said to him, well, my husband said, don't be so ridiculous. You've never said anything. And he said, well, I knew how you'd react. And I just assumed that, you know, the psychiatrist would have got it out of him by now. But, you know, it obviously hasn't happened. And, of course, we went in and spoke to him, and he was crying in the other room. And I suppose from that time on, we sat with him, and, you know, we went through everything again with him, what happened. And I suppose it was that time that, you know, we said to him that, you know, we do believe you, but we will help you with this. We will try and find books, etc. And it wasn't, I don't think at that time, it wasn't that we did believe him, but we believed that he believed it. And so obviously we would do anything to help our son. And basically we started looking into it, and, you know, here we are now.
Well, you know, and this is obviously is not normal behavior for a child, you know, a young child, to have this type of, you know, to have this type of knowledge and to be reacting to things like this. I know when I was 12 years old, for example, if I saw a show on hypnosis, I'd sit there and keep drooling like I normally did when I was a kid, right? I mean, there, you know, there's not much going on at that time of life. You want to play, and that's about it. All you know how to do at that age, I think, is love. You really don't. That's all you really know at that time. You know, you grow up and get older, you get a job, that's when you start, you know, getting angry and things like that. But at that age, you're very young. You only have a couple of basic things you want to do. And to have this kind of knowledge, to be this emotional about things, right? Mm-hmm. As far as seeing something on TV and having an opinion on it at that age.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not normal. It's something very special. And just, it would surprise me too. The one thing, you know, and you've mentioned this a couple times too, and we talked about this several times on this show, about parents and children who are having, you know, possibly having paranormal experiences, or at that age, we know a lot of kids, you know, they do have active imaginations and things like that. I'm not hinting at that at all here. In any way whatsoever. But we've talked about this several times. I mean, I always like to use my example. When I was scared, my parents ran in and said, hey, look, you know, everything's going to be fine. You're home. You're okay. The one thing my parents did say to me, though, too, was, hey, look, there's no such thing as ghosts. There's no such thing as the boogeyman. There's no such thing as anything like that at all. Nothing's going to hurt you whatsoever. I'm wondering, you know, as parents in this time when Jason was growing up, did you guys tell him things like that? Or were you more or less like, look, everything's going to be okay. Let's just see if we can work through this thing. I mean, I'm just wondering if you guys, you know, nurtured this, or was it something that just, I mean, I'm just wondering if you guys said the same thing my parents said, basically. There's no such thing as ghosts. Don't, just relax. Go to sleep. We want to go to bed. I'm wondering if you guys said anything along those lines, too.
Well, yes, we did, totally. I mean, as I said, this is why I think as well, it took us so many years to, you know, to actually, you know, come to this point where we were thinking, you know, could this be a possibility? But like you so rightly say, I mean, I think so many people, you know, they're brought up in, you know, it's their social upbringing, if you like. You know, we're told that, you know, ghosts don't exist, spirits don't exist, everything has a logical explanation. Mm-hmm. And I mean, to be honest, you know, sort of, you know, during that time when in Jason's younger years, I mean, you know, we'd see something in the newspaper occasionally about, you know, oh, this man saw this flying saucer, and, you know, and we'd laugh at it. You know, we'd think, oh, you know, the world's full of idiots. But as I say, I think a lot of it is to do with, you know, the way people are brought up, because we're brought up to believe that, you know, things like that just do not and cannot exist.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the tack that we took.
Yeah. I think, and that's a good thing. I mean, we've said that so many times on the show. That's a good thing. You're trying to be a good parent and make your child feel safe and secure in their home.
But it's just, nowadays, does it apply or not? Because it sounds, Anne, like later on, through all this stuff that Jason was going through, you realized that, because, I mean, it's no surprise, because I wrote, and Anne Andrews came from a long line of abductees,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
so evidently, at some point, you thought, you found out that perhaps you were denying your own, what you went through, or your family members, and your family members went through. And so I wonder if that's an active psychological thing that happens to people,
mm-hmm.
or you know, like, you know, it's some kind of either denial or burial,
yeah.
you know, something of abduction, or if, because you did, you found out later on that you and your long line of abductees, who you obviously would know, your entire family,
mm-hmm.
so you know people who've been through this. It's just this was the first one that you know was remembered.
Yeah. And this brought back these memories for you, obviously, Anne.
It did, yes, because I've only about, up to that time, I'd only ever had one thing which happened to me when I was about 6 or 7, and I remembered it so clearly, and it was a memory which I kept with me for many, many years. But it's the sort of thing that, you know, I just couldn't deal with it, because if I thought too much about it, you know, it really frightened me. Plus the fact that, you know, to me, it was real and it happened. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of like, you know, saying to yourself, well, I can't admit that this happened, because these things do not exist. Therefore, it couldn't have happened. So, you know, perhaps there's something wrong with me. Perhaps, you know, I'm mentally ill or something. So, mm-hmm. you know, I'll sort of put that memory to the back of my mind and just try and forget it. But it was so strong, you know, what happened, that I just could never forget it. And you know, sort of throughout the years, you know, at times it would something would trigger it, and it would always come back to me. And then it was like, oh God, yeah, you know, I remember that. And but as I say, it's you know, I just tried to suppress it, mm-hmm. because it was just so real. And but then it couldn't have been, because that sort of thing doesn't happen, or that's what I was brought up to believe.
Mm. So at the same time, you were
there's a struggle going on with you too,
right? Because you were perpetuating that even with Jason for the longest time, until wow, something mm-hmm. is happening to my son. Mm. This is absolutely wow. What is an original soul?
Yeah, I heard you mention that, Anne.
I love that name for a book or something. You need to write that book. What's an original soul?
I think it's something. I think it's an album that James Brown didn't write.
Maybe.
I gotta say it.
There you go.
But no, seriously, I heard that earlier, and I meant to.
It's just that really is a beautiful, beautiful phrase.
It is. I have asked Jason about this. Obviously, you know, a little while ago, because you know, Jason is now nearly 25 years old, so. Mm. You know, he has a lot more knowledge. You know, he can explain a lot more. And I did actually ask him some years ago what that actually meant. And the way he puts it is that you know, when everything was created, you know, when the universe was created, he said certain how can I put it? Certain energies became, and he said, out of all the energies, he said most of the energies then sort of split again, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Which I suppose, you know, I'm talking here about like the soul energy again. He said most of those energies then split into, you know, into different energies, which became, as I said, the different souls.
Mm-hmm.
But he said his energy, his essence, has remained untainted, if you like,
mm-hmm.
since it began, and he said that is an original soul. And he also explained that there are, you know, a few. He said not very many. He said, but he said there are a few original souls, you know, still about in the universe. And that's the way he explained it to me.
And these are ones that were not split; they were just kept on their own.
Yes, exactly. Because he does have memories of you know, past lives. He has very explicit, very detailed memories, and he said that, you know, he can even sort of go back to almost, you know, the very beginning, because as he puts it, there's been no sort of splitting off, you know, into different energies. So, you know, everything has sort of remained in the one place, if that makes any sense.
After the break, I want to find out what the difference is between an original soul, one that has, you know, existed since creation, and not split, and whether there are any
bargain bin soul like mine.
Yeah, whether there's advantages, like does a soul have the free will to split or not, or does it just happen, or is it happened to it? We're going to have to talk about a little bit about that. When we come back. But meanwhile, I want everybody to go to this website.
Yeah.
Everybody, load up your browsers and go to www.walkingbetweenworlds.co.uk. That's what we're talking about with Ann Andrews tonight. And after this independent music, because, you know, during the breaks, we play independent music.
And commercials for independent shows.
And independent shows and things like that. I want you to listen to that, then we'll come back, and we're going to find out a little bit more about original souls and non-original souls, or whatever their opposite would be, and also a lot more, I hope, about Jason and how Anne and her husband and the older son dealt with this.
For more information, visit ghostlytalk.com.
I'd like to share a recent experience where I strongly believe that I encountered a shadow person.
When I looked, it was January 5th, 2046.
I want to find an explanation for it. I want to rule it out as, you know, something that was logical.
There are many things we have yet to learn about and understand. Join us here at Supernatural Existence and learn about the many mysteries of the universe. Feel free to subscribe via any of your favorite podcast directories, including iTunes, or check us out on the Supernatural Existence website at www.globeye.com. The mysteries are waiting to be understood.
I really want to see something supernatural with my own eyes. Not hear it or think I heard it or anything like that. Actually see it with my own eyes, capture it on camera. Hear something weird or something like that.
Hey, it's Wolfman Mac from Wolfman Mac's Nightmare Cinema. We're hanging out at the Haunted Winery here in Warren, Michigan with the good folks from Ghostly Talk. Ooh, this place is creepy, man, but nowhere near as creepy as Wolfman Mac's Nightmare Cinema. It's a haunted drive-in, babies, and you know what we do there? We host classic B-horror and sci-fi movies, just like the ones you grew up with when you was a kid. And it's at Wolfman Mac's Nightmare Cinema right now, hosting on public access TV all over Metro Detroit. But guess what, kiddies? It's coming to you, and all you gotta do is have a computer. Just go to Wolfman Max Nightmare Cinema. It's nightmarecinema.com. We'll be broadcasting the show real soon, right from the website. Stay tuned. It's Wolfman Mac, Nightmare Cinema. Bye!
Keep us from breaking through these bars, then I'll defy Number one source for paranormal evidence brought to you firsthand by real investigators in the field. No hoaxes, no disinformation. You're listening to The Ghost Project.
I found myself face to face with someone or something that was attempting to play with my psyche as well as my physical being.
How sure are you of that?
I'm 100% sure of that.
Listening to Ghostly Talk with your hosts Doug and Scott L.
Is that the baboon sound?
Yes, yeah. Such a bad colony.
Ghostly Talk is the coolest baboon colony in the paranormal community.
We've just decided that.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, okay, really quick. When we go on break, we step away, give ourselves just a breather. Well, not really breathe, because sometimes it involves nicotine.
Yeah, in that case, you can't breathe.
We step away, though, for a second. And, you know, usually there's hijinks going on, you know, outside of the studio for a couple minutes. And, yeah, Doug just laid one. I don't know where that one came from. What happened?
This is the lamest baboon colony ever.
Yeah, I'm like, where did this one come from? That's a completely new one.
Well,
that's awesome. No, I love that. Correct me up. That killed me, Doug. We got to mention also really quick. I'm sorry. John.
Yes.
In the chat room, sent us something really
yes,
nice.
Yes, he sent us a photo that I'm uploading on the Ghostly Talk website right now.
Where are you putting it at?
Well, it's not an actual photo.
It's not an actual mugshot of us.
GT fan art.
GT fan art. Okay, cool. There's a new photo in there that John from the chat room sent over to us. It's a cool little ghost picture.
It is awesome.
With microphones. Thank you, John. I get a kick out of stuff like that. Thanks a lot.
I think it's really well done.
You know, we're working on, you know, really quick to mention that, too. You know, we mentioned a few weeks ago we're doing this refresh project with the show right now. We're updating, you know, banners and stuff and music and all this fun stuff for the show. And, you know, it's people like John that sometimes, you know, you send little things to us like that, and we're usually emailing you back going, hey, can we use that? Cool, you know?
Sure.
So thank you, John. We'll talk to you later more about that.
We forgot to mention that Anne, actually, whenever I say www.walkingbetweenworlds.co.uk, mm-hmm. that's also the name, Anne, of your book.
That's correct. Yes, it is. It's actually called Walking Between Worlds, Belonging to None.
Mm-hmm. Where is this book available at? Where can we get this book at?
Right. It's actually available from our publishers, who are Reality Press. Mm-hmm. In California, I believe it's also available on Amazon.
Perfect. Excellent. They're, and Reality Press is a great bunch of people. We do a lot of work with those guys, and they're always sending us cool stuff. Thank you, Reality Press. I get more DVDs and CDs and books from those guys. And
it's true.
It's all wonderful stuff.
That's because they're really, really into this. They're really getting it done. You know, they're getting the stories written, produced, and out there. And I imagine that they were of invaluable assistance to you, Anne, during your process of making this book happen.
Oh, totally, yes. I've got an awful lot to thank them for. You know, they're great people there.
Well, there you go. We pimped Reality Press for the first time.
I know.
That's awesome. I'm really happy.
I think that's
a
great idea because we haven't done that.
We haven't. They sent us tons of stuff.
And we still get...
It's all over the shelves, all over the place.
They're getting the job done. That's all I'm saying. I know that. Walking Between Worlds, Belonging to None, the new book. We were talking... Yeah, we were talking about original soul versus non-original souls. And I'm wondering, do you have a choice in the matter, like to split, or does it just happen? Is it part of being energy, soul energy, that this either happens or doesn't? Is it any better or worse? Are there advantages or disadvantages? Obviously, there's got to be an advantage to being an original soul in that you're then more apt to, you know, whatever the aliens worked with Jason as opposed to Daniel.
Yeah.
So evidently there's something there. But at the same time, it seems to me that there's got to be an advantage to splitting if it's an option, that is. So did you get into a little bit, just one level deeper of detail with Jason about the difference between an original soul and not?
We've had some quite in-depth conversations. You know, I must admit that some of them go totally over my head, but you know, I do try and keep up.
Yeah.
but if I explain it the way he explained it to me, Jason believes that everything, absolutely everything, is energy in one form or another. As he says, you know, if you have a table, you know, he said it's made up of tiny, tiny molecules all huddling together to, you know, to give it the shape and the strength of a table.
Yeah.
He said you can change that at any time because he said if you then burn that table, he said it doesn't disappear. He said it becomes another energy form. He said it becomes smoke. He said everything, he said absolutely everything in the universe, he said, is energy. He said, and he said all you can do about everything, he said, is, you know, sometimes he said you're able to change, you know, to change that energy form.
Mm-hmm.
And the way he puts it, he says, everything began with the one, which in another sense, I suppose, is his term for what you know some people would see as the creator, as God, or you know however you know you want to explain it.
Mm-hmm.
But he said that everything began with the one, he said, and it spread from that. He said as the one became you know as the energy grew within you know within the one within the start or the beginning. He said everything sort of, you know, then sort of spread out from that. And he said that this is where you get sort of, you know, most energies, which then sort of split into smaller energies or, well, not smaller energies, but, you know, other energies. Like a ripple effect, you know, throwing a rock into a river or a pool and, you know, you see the ripples sort of going outwards. He said it's that sort of effect. He said that there were sort of certain energies which were stronger, if you like, which didn't split off. They didn't splinter. You know, they stayed as that as they'd come from the original. He said you've got this sort of ripple effect of you know all of these immense energy. The way he says it is that, you know, you've got to realize that no matter where you happen to reside or what you reside as, he said, we are all connected because we are all the same. He said, you know, at the end of the day, he said, we are all energy from the one. And that is, in a nutshell, yeah. That is the way he explained it to me.
Well, one thing I'm thinking of, though, when you use a table example, for example, mm-hmm. you take a table that is, you know, like you said, you know, a bunch of molecules that are into a shape of a table. You know, there's a lot more to that, obviously. Science has proven over the years. But, you know, you can change that table. Now, the mm-hmm. one thing, you know, that Doug asked, it was, you know, as far as a soul, an original soul, you know, did it have a choice to split, change its matter, so to say? Whereas, if, you know, if you take a table, it's more of an inanimate object. It don't have a thought process. It don't have intelligent yeah. thinking. So if I go and I flame on with that table and burn it and I change it, that table didn't really seem to have any choice in the matter. I mean, as far as what it's made out of, what the energy is that puts that table together. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm wondering, you know, you mentioned, Doug, that, you know, you're wondering if there was a choice involved with that. I mean, that would lead me to believe that there are intelligent forms of matter in the universe, let's say, and there are, I don't want to say non-intelligent.
Well, intelligent forms of energy, I think,
well,
would
yeah.
be more.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry,
because
energy,
at that point, it's energy rather than matter. But,
yeah, yeah.
But energy can become matter and vice versa.
But there's
so.
Things that we can manipulate, though. I mean, as
right.
far,
we,
they don't
yeah.
have much of a choice in the matter.
No, they don't have a choice. And there are going to be certain things that we don't have a choice in.
Yeah.
There are certain things that we probably do. And it's just an interesting topic to explore. But
and I can understand why you might go, I try to keep my head around some of this stuff, but you may not be able to keep up. It's very deep thinking.
So Jason knows all these things. He was basically tutored since infancy and you know, in the ways of the universe and all things, right? So he knows all these things, and I'm wondering, does that still go on? Does he have a relationship with these beings now?
Yes, he does. You see, it wasn't until you know that we actually said that we believed him, and you know it got to the time where we did actually believe him, because he was actually being taken from the house, you know, during the night, and, you know, we would get up and look for him, and, you know, the doors and windows would be bolted. We had sort of three enormous dogs, you know, inside the house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was just no way that, you know, a child could have got out. But as I say, you know, when we started being presented with things like this, and it seemed to be sort of more and more, you know, it was almost as if they were saying, right, you know, you're on the right track, you know, we'll give you a little bit more, you know, so that you can start understanding what's going on. But I suppose really it was since the time that, you know, we actually did say to Jess, you know, we totally believe you, and we did at that time,
mm-hmm.
You know, and obviously, you know, do now, that the fear stopped. You know, once he knew that he had our support 100%, he started thinking about it, and he started listening to them rather than just being absolutely terrified, which had been, you know, the form up until that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was when he stopped being terrified, then, you know, as I say, he then started listening, he started learning, he started understanding. But yes, you know, he still does have the contact, but it's different now. It's not a question of, you know, they'll come for him, you know, when they want to. He has that understanding, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example. It's like he had some friends, you know, this was some years ago when he still lived at home. He had some friends around, and he always knows when they're coming, because he gets a feeling. And, you know, he said it's like a tingling sensation,
mm-hmm.
and he knows that they're coming. And, of course, it would have been sort of most inconvenient at that time, you know, with obviously friends staying in his room. And he just closed his eyes and said to them, not now, it's not a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And he said straight away he got a reply back, you know, okay, it's not a problem, we'll come another time. So he has this one-on-one, and he no longer sees them as abductors, as aliens. He sees them and refers to them as equals. You know, that they are all equals, and he works with them, they work with him, on an equal footing.
Are they after something? Is something going to change? I mean, is that what there's all the... Because obviously, Jason... Jason was an indigo child as well, and mm-hmm. so we've
get into that too.
So we've got the, I know that's a whole show,
a whole show right
itself.
There.
but so there was that aspect and the original soul, and then the abductions, and then which ended up becoming more of a partnership kind of thing where they're getting benefit and he's getting benefit.
Yeah.
But what is the benefit? What's the goal? Is something going to change for everybody? What's going on? Why is it? Or maybe it just was bound to happen no matter when it happened. And
exactly.
It's not, you know, clued into time at all. But what does it mean right now?
Sorry, what you mean, why is he, you know, why is he here, or?
Right, what's his...
Why are they coming to him?
Why are they coming to him? Is it something building? Because that's very ominous and very radio-like, you know. It really
something
is.
Something building, Anne. We need to know what the future is
like,
now.
Do I have to... Should I pay off my mortgage, or should I get a big insurance policy? No, that's very radio-like to, you always want to sound ominous, but it does sound kind of creepy. I mean, you have to understand that hearing that this was going on and is still going on, and, you know, except for the nature's changed, but it's just kind of creepy that it's going on at all.
Yeah, so I think I see what you're saying. But, you know, there again, he's not the only star child or indigo child, because he tells us that there are so many, he said that they number in the thousands now. Mm. And he said that they are all here. They are here to try and make a difference, basically. I mean, you know, I won't go into the stuff about, for the, you know, the state the planet's in. I mean, that's pretty obvious anyway. But, you know, he said that it's always been his job to try and help whenever he can. But he said that they are not allowed to force it. You know, he said they can only help if they're allowed to, if they're asked to. But he said it's to help humankind get back to what they were, he said, because he said humankind were never like this. You know, we actually got to a point, you know, in our evolution, if you like, where we were very spiritual beings. You know, we were able to use like 100% of our brains. You know, we had the power to communicate telepathically and travel astrally. It was like, as he puts it, a second nature to us. He said, you know, along the way, he said, with, you know, all the wars and, you know, the greed and the pollution, everything, he said, it's, life's got too easy for us. You know, so he said, most of that has been forgotten, you know, or put aside. And he said, it's part of his job, to try and, you know, get humanity back to that stage, to develop their spiritual sides, if you like. And he also explained to us that he's supposed to be instrumental in the education and welfare of the star kids. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he can also travel astrally. He said that that's another part of what he does. He can actually sort of travel astrally. He said usually to, like, major accidents or, you know, things like this. He said he feels where he's needed, and he'll go there. And he said he'll stay there, and he'll help where he can. And, you know, if people have expired, which is his term for, you know, if people have passed on, he says he's also on hand to help them to move on. So, you know, he's kept quite busy, but ultimately he said that he and all the star kids are here to help if we will accept their help.
Hmm. This is going to sound rather funny. The idea just came to me, though, to ask you this, and I don't know why, but it must be something that's been bothering me for a while.
Oh, boy.
Okay. I have...
Look out, Ann!
Obviously, I'm... I do a radio show, and it's on radio. It's also on internet. It's a podcast, and it's interesting. It's also my hobby, right? I don't get paid for this, and this is what I do for fun and interesting, and I love doing it. But during the day, I work on computers. right? Mm-hmm. It's my job because I have to pay bills and I have to buy things and I have to eat and sometimes often eat a lot too much. You
know, but just say it.
And I have to drive places, so I need to buy gas, petrol. Mm-hmm. So I have a day job, and I'm wondering, is it? Because it seems difficult when you're stuck in traffic or when you're late submitting a report or whatever during your daytime life to remember that, hey, we are all spiritual beings and we've got, you know, yeah, you've got this to do right now, but you're also, you know, part of the one. You are a fragment of the one. You are a spiritual being. As well as, you know, something that's, you know, in a human body at the moment and working. Mm-hmm. So it's difficult for me sometimes, I think, to balance the two or to remember and to go through my life always acting as if I am a spiritual being. I'm wondering if, for example, first, the question, which is absolutely going to be hilarious after that explanation. Does Jason have a day job? The original question. And then the follow-up would be, how does he balance all those day-to-day mundane things with being, you know, someone who is here to help?
Right, yeah, it's a very, very valid point, actually. Yes, he does have a day job. Jason is absolutely fanatical about cars, anything to do with cars. He just absolutely adores them. He's got, when he's driving, it is like a souped-up, noisy thing, but, you know, he just absolutely loves cars, and that's what he does as a job. He works on them.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, basically, it's like, you know, people sort of, you know, come here sometimes to, you know, specifically to meet him. And I don't know what they're expecting, but, you know, when they first meet him, it's sort of like, you know, they're not disappointed, but it's like, you know, you can see in their faces, they're like, oh, is this him? And, because he's so normal, you know, he'll, mm-hmm. he'll sort of, you know, joke about and, you know, and, I mean, he'll go on about his car forever, you know, if you let him, it's his pride and joy, you know, apart from his wife, but,
yeah.
I mean, obviously, he's got bills to pay, he still has to live, you know, he's got his house to pay for, you know, food to buy, so, yes, of course, he does have a normal everyday life. And as you say, it's very, very difficult in trying to balance the two. But then, say, going back to people that meet him for the first time, you know, once they start talking to him on other level, you know, sort of, you know, about all this sort of thing that we're talking about now, it's, you know, it's like they come out sort of after speaking, they're like glassy-eyed, and they, you know, they just sort of look at me and say, wow. You know, it's... I don't know. Like I say, there's nothing about him, you know, if you first meet him, that would say to you, you know, oh, this guy is different. You know, he's strange, he's weird, or whatever. Because he doesn't, you know, he doesn't come across like that. He's a totally, totally normal, normal young man. You know, he's got a job. He's, as I say, he's got bills to pay like everybody else on the planet. But, you know, just the knowledge that he has and the way that he can balance things, you know, balance the other side of his life, if you like, you know, with normality, I suppose, in a way.
Well,
you know.
And you mentioned earlier that, and something you said, that this is going to, I'm taking this away from the show.
And that, it's also good to hear.
It's gotten so easy. People have taken the easy way to live, it seems like, you know.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, while some of us complain about our jobs, how hard they are and how difficult they are on us.
I love mine.
Oh, wow.
That's true.
It is the easy way out because it is a very, you know, ones and zeros, straight lines, things like that. Very, very cut and dry. Nothing much to it. Whereas we know spiritualism and this idea that we're all one type. We're all together. We're all, you know, this big bundle of energy. That's a lot of gray area. It's very hard to get your head around.
Hard
that,
to grasp.
As opposed to Unix commands.
Well, if Jason ever comes to, Jason and you, Anne, of course, and your family, ever come to Detroit for the Detroit International Auto Show,
yeah!
You've got to let us know.
It's ironic you talk about that because we were just there. I was just there at the auto show that's going on right now as we speak, Ann. And I was there yesterday and had a great time. So he'd love it. I know
that's where they always, you know, release the new cars and show off the concept cars and stuff like that, which is really, really cool and a lot of fun. And I think Jason would enjoy that. So if you ever find yourself in Detroit, you've got to dig out our email and look us up.
Yeah, we'll take it out.
And we'll take you there. We'll go out to dinner and lunch and everything and see what you think. But we are at the top of the hour. We've got to close the show.
What a fast show.
Your book. Wow. Your book, Anne, is called Walking Between Worlds. There was a subtitle, Walking Between Worlds, Belonging to None.
Yeah.
Right?
That's correct, yeah.
And it's at www.walkingbetweenworlds.co. UK. Thank you for introducing
a fascinating
us.
Hour.
Thank you for introducing us to yourself and Jason and the story. Just absolutely great. We didn't even touch half of the things.
Yeah,
that
we gotta have you come back on again.
That we could have talked about.
I'd love to.
I swear, this is awesome.
Stay on the line. Don't leave us just yet, Ann.
Stay on the line though. Okay, so this show. I have to go through the notes.
This is going to take a while.
Show.
Yeah.
We talked, of course, to Bonnie Vent of SDParanormal.com. We talked to Dwayne Claude of WNYParanormal.com. Mm-hmm. Our good friend Jeff Belanger, of course.
Tombstone Ghost Conference. Check it out.
Yes. GhostVillage.com. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the lovely Ann Andrews about Jason and her book, Walking Between Worlds, at walkingbetweenworlds.co.uk. Quite an action-packed show. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And whether you listen on the radio or live on the caller line or on the podcast.
And eye stuff. We've got an eye in front of it now. I saw an eye chair today. An eye chair.
We're talking about that right after we close the show.
Let's definitely talk about
that. No matter how you listen to the show, thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with, of course, we're going to have John Zaffis, but you can always go to www.ghostlytalk.com and see who's going to be up at any given moment. I'm Doug.
I'm Scott L.
And I'm Bonnie.
And this has been Ghostly Talk.
I need to go someplace where a man can think. To listen too loudly.
We'll make it ourselves. Don't hate the media. Become the media.
I need to go someplace where a man can think.
The media, become the media.